Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I want to speak this afternoon on a topic many people, mainly advocates, don't hear often, and that is the dedication to the cause. Having a passion for helping the incarcerated, mainly wrongfully convicted, and those who have received very harsh sentencing. I want to give, and although he's not with us today, he has been ill, I want to give our greatest appreciation to Kyle Robinson. Kyle is an advocate with unique, talented approaches to the way he works and the way he does advocate for the incarcerated. And he has been advocating for one Tamara Washington, who is a wrongfully convicted individual who has been incarcerated for years now. Kyle has been also a big help to even me with the radio show. At times he's able to co-host with us, but also the work that he does. As many of you know, when you come on the Blog Talk Radio Shedding Light page, you'll see my picture on there. Kyle did that and without even being asked, and I really appreciate what he did. And he also put down what the topics are when we are talking about Shedding Light. I want to also mention that Kyle's been trying to raise money to form an LLC and support the subscription necessary for the graphic designs, that the work that he does. And I encourage people to support him in this. He had stated that he didn't initially intend to learn about the graphic design, but when he came across his first innocent person that is serving life without parole, he jumped into action. He created the website and social media pages for the incarcerated individuals like Tamara Washington, also Gary Brayboy, and Daryl Doolin, and many, many more. These individuals are often indigent, and it's just not in his heart to tell them, an innocent person, that he can't help them because they can't afford him. That's why I am asking to support Kyle Robinson. If you support him, you're supporting justice. And I just want to bring that out because he has been an awesome, awesome advocate, not only for the incarcerated, but also for me and the work that I'm doing. And I appreciate it because I am not into graphics. And there's so many things that I am still not aware of when it comes to technology. But Kyle has been working not only with the technical areas, but also with the wrongfully convicted, with those who have received harsh sentencing. And he is what you might want to call a jack of all trades. So please do support Kyle Robinson. And we will get more information because when he is able to come on, I would like to ask him more about the contact, his website, and other things that he's been doing as well. So again, thank you, Kyle Robinson, if you can hear me. If not, when I do see you on the show again or hear from you on the show again, we will definitely get that information. I also want to let everyone know tomorrow, April 2nd, at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, we are going to have an international show with people from London, from Belgium, from Amsterdam, from all over, across the pond, as they usually say. We are also going to have a criminal defense attorney coming in from Texas on it. We're going to be discussing an international project. We want to consider some kind of virtual meeting that we're going to be setting up so that all of our, hopefully all of our political that are interested in joining in will be joining in with other political individuals from other countries. And that will also include Franz Dahl, the former 27-year warden. It's going to include psychosocial therapists. It's going to include a consultant from London with a master's in criminal justice, and it's going to be discussing all the things that are going on in the prisons in the United States, and it's also going to be discussing the success rate that they have had in other countries in their penal system, their prison system, the way they house them, the way they talk to them, the way they speak with them, the way the programs that they offer. They're going to be discussing everything that they do, and as they always say, they treat their prisoners in those countries as human beings. They call them by first names. They don't call them by numbers. They don't treat them like animals. So I am hoping, and I ask all of you, listening in tomorrow, or even if you don't listen in, to please encourage your legislative members to consider being on this virtual meeting when it is set up, because it's going to be primarily for our lawmakers. It's going to be primarily for our leaders. And hopefully, the United States will get something out of this that they can improve the penal system, the prison system around the country. So I hope all of you will listen in, and I hope you'll encourage the legislative members in your state, especially those who are advocating right now for prison reform or criminal justice reform. Write to them, call them, and just let them know, and I will be announcing the day and the time that we decide as of tomorrow, what day and time, or maybe after the show, what day and time that we will be doing this. And this virtual meeting will be open to all of you who want to attend as well, so that you can give feedback or you can talk about your experiences with either a loved one or yourself or someone you may know that has been improperly treated, that has been inhumanely treated, that is being inhumanely treated now as we speak, and those who are serving very harsh sentences. We're going to be talking about a lot of things, and I thank these people, these professionals from other countries who agreed to come on the show and who has agreed to talk about the differences, the comparison between the mass incarceration in the United States and the more humane sentencing and treatment in their countries. We have a lot to learn. We have a lot to learn. So now I want to talk also about the injustices that are going on in this country. There's a lot going on, and we wonder why the suicide rates are so high in our country. We wonder why people come out worse than they went in. We wonder why there's not more programs being offered. And we wonder why people are being targeted and prevented from taking programs. And I have learned through experience myself, I have learned that many prisoners that are targeted are prevented from taking any kind of programs because the Department of Corrections wants them to not have anything in their records that show that they have tried or that they have succeeded in taking programs, getting certificates, getting work permits while they're working in the prisons. There are work programs. And there are so many people in prison that have been denied and deprived that opportunity. Whether through connections, family connections, victims' family connections, whether through racism, whether through some just evil overseers. And this is another thing that we will be talking about when we do this international, is to talk about the oversight of people incarcerated, the need to have independent overseers. I remember years ago hearing from some prisoners that said the Department of Justice sent in an investigator. And I believe it was around the 2020 when they had a riot at one of the prisons. They sent in an investigator from the Department of Justice. And you would think that the Department of Justice would send in somebody that's really going to do an investigation. But the prisoners were saying no. The investigator was laughing in the corner with some of the staff. So we're talking about now the Department of Justice. And even though now they're looking at making improvements, they're looking at now doing things in the prisons to reduce mass incarceration, because they have now admitted that we have a serious problem in the United States with mass incarceration. And they're looking at a lot of these programs. They're looking at a lot of ways to reduce this mass incarceration, to reduce the 2.3 million people incarcerated in prisons, in jails, House of Corrections, wherever you want to say. And then we also have a governor in Massachusetts that's doing very good work. She's doing a lot of good, and I'm hoping that she continues to do good, and I'm hoping that she will look into some of these areas where prisoners are being denied programs. I also want to talk about other states and what they're going through, because I belong to like 40-something groups in social media, and I see often how people are talking about their loved ones and what's going on with them. And again, a lot of them talking about being indigent and not being able to afford lawyers. And this is very sad too, because as this criminal defense attorney said from Texas, and he sees this all too often, he said that a lot of people in Texas that have money, they always seem to have excellent lawyers, and they always seem to be able to either get out or they end up getting their cases overturned, or they end up getting much better results. But he also mentioned there are so many that are indigent and they can't afford attorneys. And this is very sad, because if they can't afford attorneys or they can't afford appropriate attorneys, then they're in trouble. Hence, suicides. Or hence, more mental illnesses escalating. Let's think about these things, because it's very, very important that we do. And I want to ask, caller 615, you want to state your name, please?
Sure, Kyle Robinson.
Kyle, how are you? Are you feeling any better?
A little bit, because of your show. I'm starting to feel a little bit better. Yeah, I am.
Kyle, what I'd like
Thank
to
you
have
for
you know, I'd like to, I, first of all, I want to let you know that you are truly appreciated. And a lot of people are starting to get familiar with you now, because they see your name out there a lot and through videos or whatever the case may be. And some of them have asked how they can connect with you. And I've given them your Facebook link so they can check you out there. But I wanted to ask you, if you will, please tell the audience more about what you do and let them know about your website and how they can help and where they can send any, if they want to send anything, where they can send it to. Please let them know.
Sure, and thanks for asking me and for even bringing it up. So if people want to, well, let me start with the story. A couple of years ago, I got drawn into advocacy, and the first person who I met was somebody who was serving a ridiculous sentence for a crime that they didn't commit, and they had been there since they were 17 years old. So I related to their story in that they were charged as an adult and whatnot. And the guy, when I heard him tell a story, and he was calling in to a virtual meeting, and he was, you know, behind bars, obviously. But, like, the story was so powerful. The man's message was so strong that I was like, I want to be friends with that guy right there. That's somebody who I don't care what you tell me about him. I hear something in him that is special, and I believe him. Now, this is a couple of years ago. This is before he recently got out. But the thing about meeting somebody innocent is that it's kind of an insular network. So you meet one person, then you meet two, then you meet three. And before I know it, there's quite a few that I know. On the show, that when I come on sometimes, I talk about them like Tamara Washington, like Gary Brayboy, like Daryl Doolin. Michigan has a ridiculously high amount of exonerees, and that's because they've got a lot of people in their serving time who are innocent. And the real tragedy is that it's usually life without parole. So you got one problem where you got all these people that are innocent. Then you got this other problem that we won't deal with today, but sounds like we got a lot of murderers walking around on the street. But when I started meeting people, even with the first, I didn't know how to really do anything. I could barely send an email at the time, to be honest with you. So I I did what I could do, and all I could do at the time was push record. Hang on, let me get somewhere where I can be a little quieter. All I could really do at the time was push record on my phone and, you know, talk and let the phone just pick up, you know, what type of people I was talking to. And, you know, if you listen to them, you realize very quickly these people don't need to be spending their lives in prison. But, you know, there's – when you can't do nothing and you do what you can, for me that looked like starting with learning how to do graphic design. And that's because for people in there who need help, what I wanted to do was to try to find a way to help, and especially if I could, you know, if something happens to me, if I, you know, don't wake up tomorrow or, God forbid, something, I wanted them to be able to advocate for themselves or to continue the momentum of their campaign. So we decided the best way to do that was to create social media accounts. So all of the people who I just mentioned, they have social media accounts. And that allows for the people like in the audience, for example, if you want to get in touch with them, you're able to. My favorite one personally is the one that Tamara set up through me, Tamara Washington in Michigan. And it is a Facebook page called Miscarrying Justice League. And I think I sent you the picture for it. But it allows anybody who's inside of the women's prison in Michigan that wants to connect out here, to blog, to post, to tell their story. They've got, pretty much the same access to Facebook, at least for posting, that you and I do. And that allows their family to see, their posts and know what's going on with them. It allows them to connect with society. It allows us to say, I'm here, when we know that we've got sisters in there reaching out. It takes somebody to be out here to meet them, and social media is really the first platform available for that that's readily usable and readily inexpensive. So learning how to do the graphics was in service of setting up the Facebooks and the websites that everyone needed.
And you do it, you do it so quickly. I mean, everything that you do it like 1 minute we're talking and the next minute it's done. I don't think I've met anyone who has had that kind of talent to be able to do these things and do them in such a way to do the videos, the YouTubes, the design, the graphic design and the pictures and this. If you can just talk about some of these things that you do, it's just amazing.
Yeah. So, and I do them fast because I've been doing it for a while, but it really comes from when I started doing it. In fact, since I started doing it, it was pretty much always for indigent, incarcerated individuals. So, sometimes people would need something created in service of something that's happening really quickly, and sometimes I didn't do great. Sometimes I learned on the job, is I guess what I'm saying. I definitely learned on the job. But what it's amounted to is that now, I'm very quick with it. So if someone if someone knows what they want, for example, a website or a flyer or posters or just images and graphics or logos, I can create that stuff pretty quick because I've been looking at it every day for a couple of years, so it's second nature. And some of the tools that they've got now are just getting better and better. But with the graphics and the use of AI, I mean, the sky is pretty much the limit. I'll tell you something else that I started doing when the AI first came out was creating these packages for different people who are incarcerated. So all of them are a little different, and all of them are tailored specifically to someone. But I'm just going to tell you a little bit about them and give you an example of what's in them. So for Tamara Washington, for example, we're in a long battle. We're in a long fight. And I thought along the way, what types of marketing material is she going to need? You know, it would be nice to already have a press statement out for her. It would be smart to already have a letter to the governor, a letter to the attorney general, a letter to the conviction integrity unit director. And a lot of times when you send these people a letter, they either don't get back to you or they get back to you with some very cliche, workaround of actually looking at the situation. So a follow-up letter. This is stuff that for someone on the inside, it might take, a long time to write that letter. It might take a long time to get that wording. Imagine if it's something that's really sensitive, to your child who you haven't seen since, they were an infant and you went into prison. So creating the or drafting the copy, suggestive copy that might be useful all across the spectrum for legal writing, for family writing, for campaign announcements, fundraisers, everything. I started just based on what people's needs were, and then my imagination and curiosity took over from there. So now if somebody needs a document, even a very creative or unique document, the chances are I've probably got a version of it somewhere or can get one pretty quick. And
I was really going to ask you, that's exactly what a lot of families need and a lot of advocates need for their loved ones that are incarcerated. To have somebody to put the letters together, put whatever it is together that they need to be able to get this out to other advocates or to get it in mailings or emails or whatever the case may be. I wanted to ask you, Kyle, do you have a website that has all these things and has the prices that you charge for these, or has not that happened yet? Kyle, can you hear me?
Yes, sorry about that.
Okay.
I don't have a website up right now. I have had one for the last couple of years, but it was too costly for me to keep up. Since I stopped working when I moved to Portland. But I'm expecting to have it back up very, very soon. It's amplifiedsilence.org. I'll keep you in the loop on it.
Someone was asking me about that, if you did things like that, because there's a lot of people, including myself at times, unable to know how to put a professional letter together to advocate for an incarcerated individual or even a loved one. And so sometimes we need somebody that has that professionalism, that skill, that can throw, and as quick as you do things, I'm sure it wouldn't be very long if somebody were to contact you and said, I need a letter or even a petition or whatever it might be. So that's why
I was definitely asking. I'm working on a workshop. I'm drafting up a workshop that I'd like to come back and tell you about here in a couple of days or a week. I'm almost finished putting it together, but it's something that's designed to empower the family, the supporters. Because when you have a loved one inside, what you quickly find out is you're just about as isolated as they are out here, because people don't care, or people don't. I don't think it's that they don't care; they don't envision themselves being able to make a difference, and that's just not true. Everyone can contribute something. So this workshop that I'm crafting is designed to help people pretty much, and overnight. Be capable of advocating for themselves, their loved ones, and for others. And hopefully if all of the advocates or a good number of the advocates become more equipped, more capable, then that's worth it to me, because I know that it's it's investing in something good. That time that it might take me to show someone how to do something is going to serve
As you mentioned, the advocates, there's a lot of advocates that could benefit from the workshop, because I know there's a lot of people that are advocates, but they're not really knowingly able to help the ones they're advocating for. But I wanted to say, years ago when I first got into the system with my own loved one, I knew nothing about it. It was a first-time offense. It was the first time that we were ever in a predicament, a position where we didn't know who to turn to. I notice on social media, in the groups that I belong to, there are so many mothers, there's so many wives, girlfriends, relatives that don't know where to turn to. They don't know what to do. It's all new to them. And so it took me a long time before I actually learned where to look and how to do the research. But for these people, a lot of them, they don't know how to do it, and they're looking for an easy way out. They're looking for someone that can help them to get familiar with everything going on, that can help them with their documents and all of these things. So I think it's very important, especially for newly incarcerated individuals, for their families, and for those who have been in for a long time that have had no outside intervention. So this is another really good thing that I believe would be beneficial for.
Yeah, anyone who comes to the workshop is definitely going to leave much more capable of helping that person, because unfortunately, we probably all know someone who's going to be incarcerated or going to have a loved one incarcerated, and they're going to need someone to turn to. And it's tough. It's tough to tell people in that situation, there's nothing I can do, or I don't know what to do, even when that's the truth. But everyone who comes to the workshop will have knowledge, will leave with knowledge of countless ways to help. The end of the sky is the limit. The sky is the limit. And even if you can't bring your loved one home, you can empower them for the time that they're there and totally change the dynamics of their experience in there. You know, if people in there had access to the technology that we have out here, who knows what type of creative projects they would put together to educate themselves and not just do dead time, not just be, you know, sitting there rotting away. So that's going to be one of the focuses of the workshop, is to create ways or identify ways to empower your loved one while they're doing time.
It is awesome.
Because they matter and they're human, whether they get to come home or not, you know, whether they make it out or not. The time that they're there matters very much, especially to them, but obviously to us too. One of the ways, if I can tell you just a little bit more about some of the ways that that's looked. So I've got quite a few connections on the inside, and some people are into, well, everyone's into something. Some people are into science. Some people are into mechanics. Some people are into law, you know, as far as academically. They have these interests. But it is so hard to get into a program, especially if you're serving life without parole, because they figure, well, you're not going to get out anyway, so we're not going to give it. Why would we, you know, waste this slot on you, you know, who's not going to get out and get to use it? So why would we program them? And then what happens is, you know, a law or a motion goes through, and then all of a sudden you're looking at getting out in a year or 6 months, and you've got no real programming or experience trying to reacclimate yourself and get prepared for this, for life on the outside. So using AI to educate or to inform, or to at least offer supplementary information, supplementary academic information, is an easy way to totally enhance the time that anyone serves. I've seen people get so I don't want to say educated overnight, but become so informed in topics that they had no idea that that they were even interested in. And in the financial industry, in the automotive industry, you know, that there's a program I was, you and I were talking about over the weekend, in which you can very easily draft language or learn the key terms associated with any industry. And in a lot of industries, they're, you know, they're constantly changing. And you can supplement someone inside with that information. And as long as your brain is growing, as long as your knowledge base is growing, you are living. You have a reason to live. I've seen people in solitary confinement, usually, you know, after 15 months, some 15, 18 months, they start going crazy. They start talking to the walls, talking to people that aren't there, smearing feces on the wall. They start losing their mind. And it's because they don't have anything to stimulate them. And that is something that's an easy fix for the advocates who want to have a part in changing that. That is an easy fix, and we're going to talk about that in the workshop.
All right.
Well, my friend, I'm going to be quiet here. My throat is getting a little scratchy.
No, you get some rest. I want to thank you for coming on for the time you did, Kyle. And again, I want to give my deepest gratitude and appreciation for the help that you did with me, because I could never have done it, and I never saw any of it. I never saw anything like that before. I really didn't. You taught me in that short time, but it's just amazing. And I know that. Well, I just know that you can help a lot of people. You have, and you still are, and you will. But if you can, just let us know when that website goes up, or when all that information goes up about the workshop and also the, you know, the graphics. I want to thank you, but
you'll
get
be
some
the first person I call.
Pardon?
I said you'll be the first person I call.
Okay, thank you so much. But I know you get some rest, because you sounded very, very tired earlier as well. And I just want to thank you again. But get some rest. I want to say this. There was another advocate that called me just before the show, and she was telling me that she's been feeling really sick too. I don't know what's going on out there, but people just watch it with this illnesses and the changes in the weather and the, you know, the things that are going on around you. But get some rest, Kyle, and we will. I hope you're well by tomorrow so you can join the international show. Because we're going to have people from other countries on, and we're going to be talking about trying to get legislative members, lawmakers, and others to come on a virtual meeting, which we'll be setting up. But we're going to be discussing all of these things tomorrow. So if you're up to it, join us.
I'll do my best. Thanks a lot, Leona.
Thank you. You take care and get well.
Bye-bye.
So, audience, getting back to what we're talking about, the injustices that go on in the country here. And many of you, if you have a loved one inside and you're on social media, many of you, I'm sure, I've either joined the groups or I've heard from you. And I know what you're going through. And I'm sorry to say, but prisoners do get stereotypical views of incarcerated individuals, whether it be man, woman, or youth. People tend to judge, and they tend to judge people they don't know. They tend to judge for any reason whatsoever. And this weekend, as everybody knows, the Passover was celebrated, and the Passover of the Christ Jesus. And I wanted to express again my deepest appreciation to the Christ himself, because with his blood we are saved. But at the same time, when he was on that cross and the world was against him, the only ones that were right there with him to the end was his mother and his disciple, the apostle John. And this is what Jesus said to his father: forgive them not, for they know, forgive them, for they know not what they do. This is a man that was beaten so bad, tortured so bad before he was put up on that cross, and some people might say the stake. But he was beaten so bad that they say he was almost unrecognizable. And everybody, the whole crowd, when Pontius Pilate was trying to save his life, the whole crowd was crying that they wanted Jesus to be executed, to be persecuted, to be hung, to be murdered. And Barabbas, the actual criminal, they wanted him to go free. Pontius Pilate gave them the opportunity to make a decision as to who they wanted him to set free. And he himself did not want to see Jesus, the Christ, be executed or be hung on that cross. But then the Pharisees and Sadducees went over his, said they were going to go over his head to Caesar if he didn't. So that's why he had to do it. But we have people in prison. Every situation is different. People judge individuals without knowing anything about it. And it says in one of the scriptures, never judge a stranger because you don't know who that stranger may be. That stranger may be of God himself. And yet people are judging strangers. Judging strangers. We all know that there is a problem, and I say this all the time, in the United States with mental health issues and with substances, addictions. We know this for a fact because it's affecting people out in the streets. I was watching the news just before the show today, and they talked about a young man that killed his brother yesterday on the day of the Passover. He killed his brother. We hear about these individuals that kill their parents. No one wants to kill their parents or their siblings. But when you have mental health issues, when you have mental health issues that are not addressed, anger or abrupt decisions can end up taking a life and putting someone in prison for the rest of their life. And I always talk about our government. And maybe it's wrong to talk about a government, but I haven't seen the government do anything about the mental health issues or the addictions. They put them in prison, and that's it. Get them off the streets. But what the government does not realize is that there are so many people that have that are having mental illnesses and addictions, even in politics. And recently, not too long ago, a few years ago, when they made marijuana legal, there were people still in prison for marijuana usage. Now, our government recently announced a few weeks back that she's going to be releasing thousands of prisoners that are in for marijuana. Where is the Department of Mental Health? Where is the association, American Psychological Association, American Psychiatric Association? Where are all these mental health facilities, these mental health professionals who don't want anything to do with the prisoners? Because they're in prison? This is sad. This is very, very sad. Because these people are in prison, and they're being seen by unprofessionals like WellPath. They're being permanently damaged, and some of them have died. Now practice. And yet we have judges, unfortunately, in this country, that will side even though they know that these doctors are no good. They will side with the doctors simply because the malpractice suits are against somebody on the outside. When these judges and these lawyers, when they take these vows, they take these vows to serve anyone, and they take these vows to do their best to help these individuals medically and psychologically. But yet, they're so corrupt, many of them, that they do just the opposite. The lawyer that I hired for my own loved one years ago, almost 30 years ago, I thought he took a bribe. I still do, but you know something? I called him. I called him a few times. As a matter of fact, he just called me today. And I explained to him, this is a lawyer that's been advocating or fighting for his clients for years, but yet he's going to tell the psychologist that evaluated his client not to write up a report almost 30 years ago. Who does that? Not to write up a report. He asked a couple of witnesses not to come to court, not to come to Massachusetts, not to come to the United States, because one of them was from South America. These are witnesses that could have talked about the condition that the individual was in when he went down there, when he first went down. And the lawyer is going to tell them not to come. The lawyer is going to tell the psychologist not to write a report. And when the lies were going back and forth in the courtroom, and his client was telling him, or I was telling him, when these things were not correct, he sympathized with the family, which I sympathize, and my loved one was sorry for it, but my loved one at the time was severely depressed prior to it even happening. And everyone knew that, including my colleagues at social services. I was working for the state. They knew. But sometimes when people are so seriously depressed, it can go either way. It can be suicide or homicide. But when you're paying somebody almost $100,000 to represent someone, and they say, but what about that family? Let that family give you the $100,000. Because I'm fighting for a victim myself. And that's the one that committed the offense. That's the one that was sick at the time. But we have a country where the Department of Mental Health won't get involved unless something happens. American Psychiatric, they don't get involved because their whole thing is research. We know what the problems are. They don't need to do the research. They need to do the help, the healing. So what happens? Those victims who are now offenders behind those prison walls get completely ignored. They spend most of their time in prison, in solitary confinement on restrictive blocks, because prison officials and guards don't know how to handle them without handling them in the most harsh, dysfunctional ways, which only causes more depression and puts them in a position where they don't want to live anymore. I want people to know, especially advocates, I want you to know that you can be out there advocating, but you also need to be on shows like this. Not to say to come on my show, but be on any show. Bring awareness. Recruit people that have godly hearts, circumcision of the heart, that have feelings, that can remain neutral and help both sides. Try coming on the radio shows. Shows who are advocating for justice. Shows who are advocating for victims and offenders. Restorative justice. Promote restorative justice so that people can have healing. So that people can have healing. Van Jones started it for a while there. I don't know what happened with that. But I know there was a father that actually forgave the person that killed his son or daughter. He forgave because he had a chance to sit down with this person. And there was a mediator there, and they were able to talk about it. And he saw the remorseful attitude of the person he was talking to that was sitting across from him. We have people that are so codes, like the media, who continuously reports, sensationalizes on these unfortunate situations and keep it going so that the families on both sides don't get any closure. The media is just so anxious. You ever watch the news when they say, we have an exclusive only on Channel 7 or only on 25 News? The people they're interviewing, they want to get it out to the public that we're the only ones, we're exclusive, they're coming to us. Who cares? It's not about them. It's about the people that are coming to them. It's about the families on both sides. It's about the victim. It's about the offender who is a victim as well. Because we know that the prisons are full of mentally ill individuals. And I say this all the time. Individuals who are traumatized as children. Individuals who grew up in domestic violent homes. Individuals who grew up in drug-infested environments. Individuals who had no kids at all, no family. I remember I had a friend. She told me, this is a grown person. She's got her master's in business. But she told me how her father died when she was a baby. Her mother threw her out of the house when she was 12 years old. Her mother threw her out of the house to be on her own at the age of 12. These are situations where they suffer from mental illness, not retardation, but mental illnesses, traumas. They grow up. They don't want to let their guard down. They're resilient, but they don't trust. And then when they let their guard down, who knows what they're going to get? Are they going to get someone that's really sincerely in love with them or caring of them? Or are they going to get someone that's going to try to use and abuse? Someone that's going to look at the Megan Carlson case. Her boyfriend thought she loved him, but all the time she was trying to get him to commit suicide. That's not an isolated case. There was another case after that and another one after that. But what happens if they don't commit suicide? What happens if it's the opposite? They commit homicide. There's no pity. Just like the crowd said with Jesus, persecute him, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him. You don't know the person, but yet kill him, kill him. For people that are so righteous, what should be done is instead of saying kill them, should be saying how can we help in these situations? Get a website going. Get a website going for people that are on both sides. Ask for feedback or ask about their situations and how they can heal. We have these so-called evangelists on television making all kinds of money, collecting money, and preaching the word to the choir because they preach the same, just like the churches, every Sunday it's the same people. Jesus said, go out into the world. Go out into the world and preach. He also said, visit the sick and in prison. Who is visiting the sick and who is visiting in prison? And who is visiting the sick and in prison? Because there are many sick that are in prison. There are many that would be so thrilled, so happy if people went in just to sit down and talk with them. Many of them, they talk behind glass. There's no danger to it if it's a case of not trusting them. But try. There are so many people that are just crying out for help. Many of them who are so sorry for what they did. Many of them who couldn't help what they did because they weren't in their right minds at the time. People that didn't take their medication or people that, like I say, resilient until one too many things happened, and that resilience is gone. I know a prisoner in Pennsylvania, and many of you may have heard him before. He called in a few times. But he had a brother and a mother and father. His father was the first to die. His father committed suicide. And then his brother committed suicide. Now this young man, he's not young anymore, but he was a young man that ended up, he had an alcohol problem. And I guess he ended up getting in a fight with a police officer. So he went to prison. Unfortunately, when he came out, he ended up going back in again because he got caught drinking, violation of parole. But his mother ended up dying of cancer. So now this individual is in prison, and he's supposed to be getting out soon. And he's getting out to nobody. His family, his mother, his father, his brother's gone. He's going to be staying with somebody, and the man he's staying with is quite old. But at least he'll have a place to stay and most likely a job as he did last time. But not everybody comes out with even that. Not everybody comes out with a place to go to. Not everybody comes out with a job. A lot of people are coming out to nothing. They don't know what they're going to do because they've been in prison for so many years that everything has changed so much. And we all know that. We know things can change in a matter of a year or even 6 months. But for people coming out after they've been incarcerated for years and years, it's like coming out to a whole new planet. They're more afraid coming out than the people on the outside are afraid of them. There was an 86-year-old man, is an 86-year-old man in one of the prisons in Massachusetts, and a prison has been advocating for him. The man is 86 and he's disabled. And the incarcerated individual that's advocating for him said, he's afraid to come out. He's afraid to come out. He doesn't know where he's going to go, what he's going to do. He doesn't know anything about the outside world anymore, outside communities. There's a lot of crime going on today, but these are all new crimes by different people. These people on the outside, a lot of them are getting more violent than those that have been in prison all these years. A lot of them are young people attacking older people. And I'm sure all of you have heard about all these incidences. But why should the people that have been incarcerated for all these years continue to stay in prison and pay while the young people on the outside are doing all of this and everybody wants them to not have to serve any time or not have to serve long sentences or life sentences? Stop projects. Let these people out. Let them have an opportunity, especially if they're over 50 years of age or 55 years of age or disabled, seriously disabled. Give them another opportunity. Give them another opportunity. You know, one of the things is in Brockton, Massachusetts school, high school, I learned was on the national level of one of the most violent or the most violent school in the country. And they thought about bringing in the National Guard, but a lot of people, I believe even the governor, did not want to bring in the National Guard. And I started thinking about this. Do you know a lot of kids, a lot of young people, they look up to a lot of these people in prison. I don't know if you remember Tukey Williams in California, but I think he started the Crips. But yet, throughout the years he was in prison, he got all kinds of awards and everything. He changed his life, turned his life around. He was on death row. And unfortunately, people from all over the world were trying to advocate for him to be able to be saved from the death penalty. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, at the time governor, had him executed anyhow. But the thing is, with Tukey Williams now, this would have been a man that all the young people would have looked up to because these young people on the outside, they're tough. They think that they've got it together. They're really tough. So when somebody that was tough at one time comes out, they're looking at, what is he going to do? Is he going to, you know, they're going to be listening to him. And he, just like anybody else that's been in for years, is going to come out and they're going to say, listen, I was you at one time. I was out in the street. I was doing the same thing you're doing. I didn't care who I hurt. I didn't care about anything. But let me tell you, and those kids are going to be listening with their ears wide open and their eyes wide open, and they're going to hear from these people coming out of prison who have been in for years. For years, that have committed some of the same crimes, if not worse, or the same, not as bad. They're going to listen to these people because these people now have a lot to offer. And maybe they need to put these kind of people, and I shouldn't even say kind of people, they should put these incarcerated people that have been in for so long into the school system where these schools are so violent. The teachers are afraid. The teachers are afraid of these kids. Let these people come out and let them go into the school system. They can go in with their overseers or some of their parole officers, their probation officer. Sit these kids down in a chair. Just like you have group therapy, you have everyone sitting around in a circle talking about their lives, talking about anything. You'd be surprised how quickly these young people will start opening up when they're being heard by people that have went through the same thing, that have gone through the same thing they went through. They're going to be sitting down in that chair. They're going to be looking at these guys that just came out, and they're going to start opening up. They're going to start pouring out. As soon as these people start talking and letting them know what they went through, these young people are going to identify with them, and they are going to relate to them, and they are going to talk about the problems that they're having in their life. Who's given them that opportunity right now? Who's given these people that went in when they were young, when they were under the age of 25? Who's given them the opportunity to be able to show that they can help these young people on the outside? And then again, as I always say, with jobs, there's so many jobs that can be created by all of these dilapidated buildings. All of these homeless people, all of these ex-offenders, all of these immigrants, people are talking all the time about how they're overwhelmed. They don't know what to do with them. But yet there's all these dilapidated buildings, all these places that can be renovated by ex-offenders, by some of these male immigrants, by the vocational schools, the students. People don't know how to work in harmony. They don't know how to come together, all races, all religions, all cultures. And when I say cultures, I'm talking about cultures. Look at, you've got the culture in the vocational schools. You've got the culture in the immigration area. You've got the cultures in the homeless area. You've got the cultures that are still on the street. Bring the tools. Bring all the tools together. Bring all the legislative members together. Bring all of these people out there and pick and choose, if you have to, the best of the best, because there's so many of them. There are dilapidated buildings that can be renovated, and these people can move in immediately once they're done. And you bring all these people together, they can take a dilapidated building and have it fixed in no time, within maybe a couple of weeks, a month, if you put them all together. Unification. United we stand. And that's the way these buildings will be. United, together, renovating these places. And the women, you give away free food. You have these food pantries and everything. So bring these people to do the renovations. Bring their parole officer or the probation officer or the overseers, lawmakers, whatever. Have the women bring all kinds of food. Set out a buffet in the streets. It used to be that song, Dancing in the Streets. You can bring all this in the street. In the summer's coming. make it a beautiful, united effort to improve the streets physically, to improve the streets with bringing people together to renovate these places, get it done real quick, and stop putting these people in there. There's a building in Brockton that will house hundreds and hundreds of people, and it's right near City Hall. And it's been vacant for years. For years. People cry about the homelessness, and they cry about the immigration issues and all of these issues. But yet the answer is right before their very eyes. The answer is there. Take advantage of it. God is showing us something. You know, a lot of times I think these people are incarcerated. And I've told some of them, I think God is not, he's not looking at them. He's looking at the people on the outside that could be helping them. Because God knows the hearts of all mankind. And he knows the hearts of a lot of people behind those prison walls. He knows what they're going through. Perhaps he's watching the people on the outside that are just doing that, watching, that are just doing that, judging, that are just doing that, sensationalizing. And the media doesn't even go into the prisons, but yet they're quick to report news that they get from one side. They don't report both sides because they don't take the opportunities to go in. I know people like Diane Sawyer and Barbara Walters, I know they've interviewed people behind bars, but not in the prison. They've had them in the prisons, but in a separate area or in their unit, in their area. But they took it upon themselves to interview certain ones. I guess those who claim to have been wrongfully convicted. But if the media was to be more humane themselves and go into the prisons and meet with these people, they probably would find out the very same thing that most of us have found out throughout the years. That these are victims as well. That these are victims as well. And they deserve a second chance. If they are either in for wrongful convictions or if they are in for first-time offenses, if they go to prison on a first-time offense, who in their right mind is going to sentence anybody that made one mistake to prison for life or life without parole or death row? And how many people have died on death row only to find out months later or years later that they were totally innocent? What happens to the people that executed them? And what happens to the people that voted for death penalties? They don't think that they're murderers, but they are, because they did the same thing. They wanted that blood so badly that without even knowing the people that they're executing, they voted for the death penalty. They cried for the person to be executed, just like the crowd cried for the execution of the Christ Jesus. I see it all the time. Time is coming to its end. By the way, everybody, I don't know if you've seen any kind of news on the internet or wherever, but they're talking about April 8th. So in 7 days, something's supposed to happen, not just the eclipse, but they're talking about other things. They're telling people to keep their dogs inside for whatever reason. They're telling people to stock up on water, stock up on food. They're talking about all these things that are supposed to happen on the 8th of April. You know, sometimes we think they're crazy when they say these things, but again, I think of Noah with the flood. People thought he was crazy. They laughed about it too, but it happened. And then God told Noah the next time would be by fire. And everybody's still doing the same thing today. They figure because it hasn't happened in all these years, it's not going to happen. Now they're talking about April 8th. I'm going to say this, everybody. Life is too short. And a lot of times, because something doesn't happen right away, we think it's not going to happen at all. But like it says in the Bible, 1,000 years is like a day with God, and one day is like 1,000 years. And look at what the Christ Jesus talked about, the 3 days. You tear down this temple, in 3 days I'll rebuild it. Okay, we're talking about 3 days. We're talking about 3,000 years that the Christ was executed, but he wasn't crucified. It wasn't 3,000 years yet. It's around 2,500 years. But it also says in the book of Matthew, it says, unless the days be shortened, none of his elect will be saved. So he's planning on shortening the days. So we need to really be on the watch. We really need to be listening. We really need to be looking. We really need to be praying. And we really need to stop judging. We need to stop judging others that we don't know. And even if we know them, we need to stop judging. And the reason I say that is because we are all sinners. And we all have to look at what we've done in life. We can't be judging others. We just can't. And for those of you that do, I feel bad. Because those of you that are judging people you don't even know, or even judging those that you do know. They used to say when you point your finger, you have three fingers pointing back at you. So really watch how you think, how you speak, how you talk about others, and think about what you're not doing. Because if God is looking at you to see how much help you're going to give someone, do unto others as you want others to do unto you, well, that says it all. That says it all. So I just want to say this, everyone. We have talked and we have talked and we have talked. And right now, there's nothing strange. There's nothing that you don't know about. Because this show is to bring awareness, shedding light. And when we pray, we always ask God to shed that light. We always say, thank you for the light that you bring to us when we are in our storms. Thank you for the light that you bring to us, Father. He's given us the wisdom and discernment. It's up to us to use it. It's up to us to share it. It's up to us to be neutral in all situations. Because we don't know what caused the person to stumble or who caused the person to stumble. There's a lot of things that we don't know. And if we judge, or if we cannot remain neutral, then we're part of this whole plot that Satan has for us to do evil. Two wrongs don't make a right. When they had the death penalty, and they were executing people, and they still do in some states, for taking the life of another. When they execute somebody for doing that, they're doing the very same thing. The only thing is they feel they can do it because they can get away with it because they are in power. They are part of the government. But anybody in their right mind would say, you don't justify the killing of someone by doing the same thing to another individual that has done it. It doesn't make sense. And anybody that thinks on those lines should not be working in the government. And first-time offenders, come on, life without parole. Put yourself in their place or put your children in their place. And ask yourself, would I want my son or my daughter to spend the rest of their life in prison without any opportunity to be ever be free? For one mistake. One mistake. And for these people that are against abortions, they're just as bad. They're against abortions, but they're not there to help the women when they have these babies. They're not there to help them, to support them. And when these children grow up, a lot of them might grow up without fathers. When they grow up, and there's no role models out there because all our role models are wearing their pants down to their behind a lot of our role models are out there trying to play it with some women, womenizers, or abusing somebody's mother or sister or girlfriend. And these pedophiles that are getting away with so much, well, the person that they violated is serving life and life without parole. And these pedophiles are getting away with it. Think about these things. Think about these children that were beaten and abused, children that were violated, that are now grown up and in prison, serving life and life without. They've already been punished, and now they're in prison being punished more by ignorant, barbaric overseers and everybody on the outside talking about incarcerated people, forgetting that everybody's human, whether they're overseers or they're mentally ill or addicted or whatever the case may be. When you stereotype, you're keeping out the ones that are really doing the worst in the prisons, and that's the overseers. You're leaving them out, and those are the ones that you should include firsthand. I remember years ago when, say, a police officer got caught doing something wrong, they were held more accountable than you and I would be. Because they used to say that they were supposed to be the role models. The role models are the ones that should get punished the most if they fall, if they do something criminal-like. We have people, chief of police, law enforcement, that are being investigated now for putting in overtime work, getting paid for work they're not doing. Or they didn't do. A lot of prisoners are kept in their cells because they talk about lack of staff. How can they say they have a lack of staff when a lot of the staff are out calling in sick so they don't have to work, but they're getting paid anyway? See, they get paid even though they're not working because they cover up for one another. And I'll say it again with drugs in the prisons. You find it on the internet. God's caught smuggling drugs into the prisons. God's caught overtime, putting in overtime for work undone. Whatever you want to find out about anything that has to do with anybody in the prisons, overseers as well, just go on the internet like you're writing on a piece of paper and write down what you want to find out. Female prisoners being raped by male guards, like the ones in Lowell Prison in Florida. So many things going on. Many people don't have a clue what's going on. They don't have a clue. Just because somebody has a title, somebody wears a uniform, they automatically think that that person has the right to do the same thing that incarcerated individuals are doing or did do to go to prison. If that's the case, can you imagine all of us wanting to get into the field of law enforcement or COs, correctional officers? Think about it. If we're thinking about it, think about the ones that already thought about it, and now they are in the prisons overseeing. This is shedding light. This is shedding light. And what you do with this light that's been shed, this awareness that has been brought to you, you can just ignore it and continue to be fools and allow these overseers, law enforcement, or whomever, continue to do what they're doing. You can stand by and watch these suicides escalate in this country. You can stand by and watch these prisoners be torn apart, damaged physically, spiritually, and psychologically. You can watch these people who already suffered before they went to prison and suffer more after they go to prison because of people like us that vote. People that vote. And when they vote for what seems good to them at the time. Voting for the death penalty, get rid of people. You don't have to worry about it after that. Not in this world anyway. Not while not while you're still alive. But there's going to be a day when everybody dies before they go up for judgment. And I don't want to be one to go before our Maker without having done something to help these people. I want all of you to think about it. And I'm going to say, I hope everyone has a good evening. And again, tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, we're going to have several people from the United States calling in, but we're also going to have numerous people that are going to be coming in from other countries that are going to be talking about the prisons in their countries, the success rates, the programs, the types of housing that they have, and the success that the United States can have if they would put aside some of their pride and take heed into the successes of other countries. So I thank you all for listening in, and we are now going to end this episode. Thank you so much, and have a good evening.